නමෝ තස්සා භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සා නමෝ තස්සා
Good morning
භගවතෝ
in progress.
අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සා නමෝ තස්සා භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සා
So today we'll be continuing with the previous lecture that we started about the unconditioned realities. We mentioned that roughly in the beginning of the previous lecture, there are two ways that the unconditioned realities can be explained, and also the conditioned realities. That is, by in terms of the characteristics of conditionality, the sankata lakkhana, and also based on the fact whether something needs the support of other realities to its existence, need the support or not for its existence. It means like any reality that has the three characteristics of arising, aging and vanishing, decaying and vanishing, then it's a sankata, it's a conditioned reality. But in the very best, very initial, in the very primary explanation, we say that something is conditioned when it is supported by other realities for its arising and also for its existence. Then, if a reality doesn't possess any of these three characteristics of arising, decaying and passing away, and also it's called unconditioned. And then, the very basically, primary according to the primary explanation, if a reality doesn't need the support of other realities for its arising and existence, we call it an unconditioned reality. So, in this previous lecture, we discussed about both the aspects. And then the very important factor, imperative fact is that if something is unconditioned, it means that it doesn't have an arising. Arising always requires the support of some other realities that have already been there. We normally can categorize all the conditions of the entire sphere of conditioned realities into five groups. It means the conditioned realities, the paramatta dhammas. I'll not go into the paramatta jatika level. If we talk about the paramatta dhammas, we can categorize all the conditions, the causes into five groups. Rupa has four and nama has one. Nama means the mentalities. All the mentalities are conditioned by the previous mentality, means I would call the cluster of mentalities. They don't arise alone. A cluster of mind and mental factors are conditioned by its preceding, it means immediately preceding, not the preceding mentality. The previous mind moment supports the following mind moment. That is the very basic support every mind moment needs. Mind moment means mentality needs. So that is one type of a condition. Then all the rupas are categorized into four groups. Some rupa are made out of karma, some rupa are made out of consciousness and mental factors together. Some rupas are made by the heat element or the coldness, tejo dhatu, and some are made out of the nutriment element, oja. So these are the very basic five causes that we need for the arising of conditioned realities. Then we also normally say, if a conditioned reality arises, there should be some other realities before its arising. Out of the five groups, all the conditions have arisen before the result, except for the mind-bone matter and the mind arises together. But there is another requirement that the mind is unable to produce a mind-bone matter unless there is a support given by the kamaja rupas. In most of the cases, it has to have arisen before, but in some cases we can also say the requirement can be happening together. Anyway, so mind-bone matter is something like outcome of the mainstream rupas. So we'll just leave that discussion to another time. So we normally say the conditioned realities need the support of other realities. Unconditioned realities do not need the support of other realities. So if something is an unconditioned reality, it doesn't have an arising, but it does exist. It does exist. So Nirvana is such a reality which has been existing forever and it will exist forever according to Buddhism. and it doesn't have an origin and it doesn't have a cessation or ceasing away, and it doesn't need the support of other realities for its existence. That is called unconditioned reality, unconditioned state. The unconditioned state is very secure, because if something is conditioned, it depends on the causes. Something is conditioned, it depends on the causes. So if an unconditioned reality doesn't depend or rely upon others, so it's a very stable, secure state. A stable, secure state. And also it doesn't have a beginning and an end. Beginning and an end. So one can ask the question, so what is the use of such an unconditioned reality? That is why we normally say we attain it. We gain it. Gain not in the sense, for instance, if the phone that I have, if my phone is permanent, it's not going to affect myself. Because as long as I'm impermanent, it doesn't matter whether it's permanent or not. So question can be asked, if nirvana is permanent, so what is the use of it? If we are impermanent, how can it help us? How can it be a refuge? How can it be the greatest bliss? That is why we normally say we have to attain it. Attaining is not just observing. There are a few ways of attaining, has been explained in Buddhist teachings. Observing directly is one sort of an attainment. Pachakka we call. Sachikarana. Sachikarana. Sachikarana is like observing it, arousing certain spiritual qualities within ourselves. And that is called Patilabha Sachikarana. Aramana Karana Sachikarana. And then Adhigama Sachikarana also is twofold. Arousing, again, Patilabha and Adhigama are same in that sense. The next is you attain it. You attain it. It means you our non-arisen suffering ceases. That cessation is equal to nirvana. How it is equal, we discussed last time. It's like there are only two stages, two states. So when one state is gone, the remaining state manifests. It's what is there. So we normally say we attain the nirvana. That's why it's a refuge. Otherwise, like if you think nirvana is something, some special object, permanent. So what is the use of it? It is not going to be a refuge for us. It's considered as a refuge. Think about the phone that I have. Even it's permanent, it's the most valuable thing in the world. If it is the most valuable thing and it doesn't, is not affected by any means, so what is the use for me? It's just I observe it. I can use it, but it's not going to affect me because I am a separate entity. If I am subject to decaying and passing away and born again, so it's not going to be a refuge for me. Only way we can consider it as a refuge, by just observing this, if my suffering is going to cease, is suffering, or I'm going to transform into a different person, then we can say it supports to my refuge. So, but it's not how the Buddhism has explained it. Buddha has explained nirvana is the greatest refuge. Refuge means, how do we explain it? It's like, it's there are two stages, not the third stage. So when the suffering is gone, what is left is nirvana. We normally say, conventionally we say, we attain the nirvana. So that is how we normally explain. Now I'm going into, we discussed about five types of nirvana. Like, I think you already have the handout. We discussed about five types of nirvana, and in the previous lecture I talked about the last one, the great nirvana that we attain. Now I'm going to explain the remaining types of nirvanas. For that we are going to use a formula. The same formula that was used to explain about the last nirvana. Yeah, so we'll go into the diagram and see how the great nirvana was explained last week. Normal diagram is the birth. So Nama and Rupa keeps on arising. One point, the present moment, the death. Then we have karma, supported by avijja and tanha. The previous life also we had karma, supported by avijja and tanha. So then the previous life, the nama rupa has already arisen and passed away. So in the future, there is going to be nama rupa. We call them anuppanna. Right? We are not naming it as future in this diagram for the easiness of understanding. So the kamma in the past life got the opportunity and it gave a rebirth. So this karma at one stage would get the opportunity and produce a new suffering life, the opportunity moment, right? The moment they get the opportunity. So this is the anuppanna, the non-arisen suffering. I'll be using the Pali terms, anuppanna suffering. This is paramatta jatika, as we call. Remember, these are the paramatta dhammas. In the future reality, this is the place for the future of paramatta dhammas. Anuppanna reality should come here as a potency, but I'll be using it for the easiness to convey the idea. Right, so this is the kamma giving a result. So now, what was the formula we used? That's quite important. Upadino dhamma, I'm not talking about it here, because it's not necessary to this place. Now the formula is, we explained about the formula is, now if you see the causes are there, as long as the causes are prevailing, uneradicated or unremoved, the suffering, we are bound with the suffering that is going to happen. We are bound with the suffering that is going to happen. So when the causes are removed, the suffering, the non-arisen suffering, will be ceased before it's arising. So the first formula would be using it here. Paramatta jatika. Present moment, death, this is the opportunity for the karma, right? Now we are going to write a formula. What is the formula here? Now in the suffering, in terms of the suffering, the birth. So how we are bound with suffering, the suffering we are talking here is the causes are prevailing, right? As the causes are prevailing, we are bound with a non-arisen suffering. Is also present. The causes are present, the non-arisen suffering is also present, right? So non-arisen suffering means suffering has not arisen yet. We are not talking about the arisen suffering. Non-arisen, that's important. So we also said the liberation, this is the formula now. The causes are prevailing, non-arisen suffering. It's better, I think I bring it here. From here, it will be nicer. Non-arisen suffering is present, right? If the causes are there, the non-arisen suffering is present. We are bound with it. We are bound to it. Then what happens when the causes are removed? The non-arisen suffering would cease. When the causes are removed, for example, if this was removed, whatever means, this would cease before its arising. That is important. Now there are two ways that this non-arisen suffering could come into cessation. There are two ways the non-arisen suffering can come into cessation. One is the causes would prevail. For example, if now the suffering, we are bound with the suffering that is going to happen in from the next life. If we just keep ourselves in the same state we are in without removing the causes, we would surely experience or confront that suffering. We'll come in contact with that suffering. So then after contacting it or after experiencing it, it would naturally cease away. That is a one type of a cessation. So after experiences in suffering, immediately it passes away. That is also a type of a cessation which is not useful at all. It's a natural cause. Anything would arise would naturally pass away. So we are not talking about that cessation. The liberation is the cessation of the suffering that is about to happen, is going to happen. So liberation should come always before the suffering has arisen. Always before the suffering has arisen. We get released from the suffering that is supposed to happen. I think I explained this in many occasions. But how do we understand that? The liberation comes from the suffering that has not happened yet. We are not talking about a liberation from the suffering that we have experienced already. We are experiencing already. We are talking about a liberation from the suffering we are bound to or bound with. So therefore, the cessation, the liberation we are talking about is before its arising. Now, for instance, if this was the moment that we attain arahantship, if this was the maggacitta, this eradicates suffering, at that same moment, we would be freed from the suffering that is going to happen. This is the moment that you get freed. Not at this moment. We get freed from the moment you remove the causes. Because the reason is, when the causes are removed, at the same time, the suffering will be no more. Suffering will be no more. So we call this the cessation. Of the non-arisen suffering. The idea is clear, but I would add some point before its arising. Before its arise, cessation of the suffering, non-arisen suffering, before its arising. So when I say cessation of the non-arisen suffering, the idea is clear, but I would like to emphasize this point before its arising. For example, if we are born in the next life, there is no way that we are going to be freed from the death of the next life. If we are born in the next life, it's impossible that we'd be free from decaying of the next life. So after that suffering is obtained, after we experience that, there's no way that we cannot be freed from the effects of that suffering. So therefore, if you want a liberation, we have to attain it before we encounter it. That's very important. So always, now, another way to look into this formula is, now the causes are prevailing. Now a liberation is possible only when causes are prevailing, the effect has not arisen yet. So sometimes the causes are prevailing and the effect has arisen. In that sense, we cannot be freed from that effect because it has already occurred. It's true that it's momentarily, but it's like there's nothing called liberation from that. We just experience it and it passes away as a law of momentariness. So it's not a liberation. It's not considered as a liberation. For example, a teacher would punish us. Parents would punish a child, hit a child, something which is painful. So as soon as it was hit, the pain was there and it would pass away within few minutes, the physical pain. Do we say that I was liberated or I escaped that punishment just because the pain has reduced, just because that incident has finished? No, we don't say like that. We would say I was unable to escape that punishment. I had to experience it. It's true that punishment is not going to last forever. But we don't normally say, we cannot say that we got liberated from it. We had to experience it. We would be freed or liberated from that punishment only if I was able to convince my parents or convince my teacher not to hit, I escaped there. I was able to produce what they required, the homework. Only then I got freed from that punishment. So that is the basic formula that we have to use. So now, for instance, I was given a task by my teacher. Normally in Asian countries, they do punish the children if the work is not done. Most of the people who lives in Asia are subject to these kind of things. So now teacher has given me an assignment or a homework. I'm supposed to deliver it by tomorrow. So the tomorrow has not occurred yet. I'm still today. So now I have the possibilities of experiencing that punishment or getting freed from that punishment. What are the possibilities? One way is I do the homework and finishes it and it accomplishes his task. Or I would get sick and get a letter from my parents that I was unable to do it. Or I would absent and delay a day and do my work and deliver it next day. So there are many possibilities that you can extend your punishment or you can escape your punishment. But if I'm supposed to go tomorrow, if I have to go tomorrow, because you cannot cut the classes unnecessarily, parents would send you to the school. So if I'm lazy and if I neglect that homework, and if I go there, I'd surely encounter the punishment. So now today, the tomorrow is the punishing day, the day of punishment, for example. So the cause is there. Because the teacher has entrusted, or teacher has given us a task. So now the cause is there. If I match the task and the punishment, this homework should not be considered like that. But anyway, if we consider it for the sake of the example, now as long as it is given to me, I am with a cause that if I don't accomplish this, I would face the punishment. At the same time, if I accomplish this, because the undone task is the cause. That's how we can see it, look into it. The undone task, unfinished work is the cause for the punishment. Unfinished work is the cause for the punishment. So if I make it finished, accomplish it, I'm not going to encounter it. The cause is with me. The unfinished work is with me. So, but still, the punishment has not occurred. So this is a situation we say, the cause is prevailing, the effect has not occurred yet. The cause is prevailing, the effect has not occurred. So before the effect occurs, before tomorrow morning, if I change this cause, the unfinished work into a finished work, I'll be free from that suffering. So at this moment, I have an authority. I have my autonomy. If I want, I can go with the unfinished work and encounter the suffering. If I wish, I strive hard, work hard, maybe overnight, get the help from my parents or friends, siblings, and finish this. And go to the school with a finished task, not the cause for the punishment, having removed that cause. The cause is the unfinished work. When it has been finished, the cause has been removed. It's no more. So I'm not going to experience the suffering. So liberation is in this level. The cause is prevailing. Right? The cause is prevailing. Effect has not arisen. So instead of suffering, I'll change the formula a bit. Right? The cause is prevailing. Effect has not arisen. Effect has not arisen yet. So what happens? If the cause continues, right? If the cause continues, for example, if we draw the timeline, we try to bring it into another type of an analogy. Sorry for that. Cause is here. Right, cause is here. This is the line of the cause. Effect is here. is not arisen yet, right? So if at this moment, if the cause still prevails, this would occur. If the cause still prevails, this would occur. Right? If the cause is removed from here, the cause is removed. When we come here, there is no cause, then there will be no effect. Right? So at this moment we are experiencing, what we are seeing is we are bound with an effect which has not arisen yet. So if we keep the cause and come to that moment, if we keep the cause and is come to the death with the cause, we are going to get the effect for sure, according to Buddhism, for sure. But if you remove the cause and face the death, it means being an arahant, you come into the death. We call it parinirvana. It's the death of an arahant. Buddha died. So, arahant dies, the effect is not going to happen. So, this is the formula. It's very difficult to bring it into a... at the moment, it's difficult to bring it into a mathematical formula. So, the cause is there. The effect has not arisen. So, we have a possibility of... this is the liberation idea. The liberation, idea of liberation. The cause is there, the effect has not arisen. But it's bound to arise. So if you put down the cause, effect would also be put down. If we keep it, the effect would arise. So this is the basic formula that we are going to use for the remaining nirvanas. I hope you got the idea. The cause is present, effect has not arisen. If you put down the cause, for example, if you write it here, cause is cut off. Cause is removed. The non-arisen effect would also be removed, right? This is the two formulas that we have to use, right? Now, another thing to explain. To have a liberation, to attain a liberation, we should be bound with some suffering. If there is no suffering that we are bound with, there is no liberation. So that's why after attaining arahantship, you don't need to attain again another liberation. You are already liberated. Why is that? Because there is no suffering awaiting him. So therefore, when we are talking about a liberation, we should always keep in mind, there should be a suffering that has not arisen yet. That is a requirement. I'll repeat it again. If we are talking about a liberation, there should be a suffering that has not arisen yet. We are looking for a liberation. If there is no such suffering, there is no necessity of a liberation. So that's why an arahant doesn't need another liberation. He has already been liberated. He has got liberated. So that is also quite important. So when we are talking about a liberation, we have to show from what suffering that we got. What was the suffering that was bound with us? What was bound to happen? Only then we can talk about a liberation. Now with that idea, we'll go into the explanation of the remaining nirvanas. Right, remaining nirvanas. If you have the handout which was distributed last week, Asankata Paramatta, we go into the number 1.7. Right? Oh no, we'll read 1.6 first. That's quite important. Another way of referring to these unconditioned states, the first explanation is, we said there is a state which is unexplainable in terms of logic. Number 1.6, another way of referring to these unconditioned states is the cessation of the suffering that would have arisen had the conditions prevail. In this regard of being the cessation, these states are called Nibbana, ceasing or cessation of the suffering. This is a cessation of the suffering before their arising, hence called Anuppada Nirodha, before its arising. cessation of the non-nourishment suffering. At the same time, it is a state of being freed from the suffering that would have confronted if the causes prevail. Hence, it is called vimutti, liberation. It's a freedom. As one abandons various types of suffering, he attains this unconditioned states, either temporally or permanently. They are also so-called pahana, removal of suffering. Removal of the suffering, liberation from the suffering, cessation of the suffering, and that is all of the unarisen suffering. So these are the four ways that we can explain this liberation. Now we'll go into sammuti nibbana. Sammuti nibbana. We have five nibbana. Sammuti, tadanga, vikkammana, samucheda, and nissarana. We explain about the nissarana actually. Sammuti nibbana is, we go to the 1.8, is the temporary freedom from the suffering of the world, such as pain, fear, cruelty of others, and sickness and so forth, which have not yet been confronted. Confronted, I mean, like not yet been encountered, right? Not yet been faced. This freedom of troubles is a freedom from troubles. This freedom from troubles was explained in various verses which Kisar Gotami, the Sakyan princess, uttered to the Bodhisattva on his last day in the household. So when the Bodhisattva was about to renounce his world, Kisar Gotami, I think most of the Buddhists know this story. Kisar Gotami, one of his relatives, because the Sakyan clan was very huge, because the Bodhisattva had a special look during his last day in the household. He was looking very handsome that day. And also the story says one deity came and gave him a makeup, knowing that this is the last day of this great being in the entire samsara as a householder. So he was very attractive. The princess saw him and she uttered the following verses. Nibbuta nuna samata, nibbuto nuna sopita, nibbuta nuna sanari, yassayang idi sopati. She was very happy to see the Bodhisattva and she said, a mother of such a son, of the son I am seeing, like Bodhisattva, a father of such a son, or a wife of such a husband, would always be of such a husband, endowed with beauty, the handsomeness, the merits of past lives, wisdom. He was a very wise person. Indeed lives happily, having been freed from all sorts of sufferings and dangers. Surely if such son is there, the family would be happy and would be protected, and surely the wife would be given all the support, comfort, and also the protection. So she was very she said this. So the teachers of the Theravada tradition, some would have different opinions on this. What I'm going to explain would explain that this sort of freedom from the dangers is called a certain kind of a liberation. Why is that? Now we have to go into the formula. Keep in mind, the formula is the causes are prevailing, effects have not arisen. So what are the effects? Like in the human life, dangers are very common. Sufferings are quite common for the body, for the mind, in the living, in the society. There's problems that would come from society and so forth. Only when such a protector like a son or a husband or a father is there who can face these and cure these problems, who can bring remedies to these problems, then what happens? Those problems that are natural to our life would be shielded. So the causes were there. Any time the suffering would have occurred, but when there is the causes were prevented, not completely removed, prevented by a special person, a man or a being, those effects, we would be freed from those effects temporarily, as long as this person protects you, as long as this person is with you. So likewise, when the Bodhisattva's incident, what the Kisar Gotami said was, if we have such a person in our family, surely the family would be freed from such dangers, from such sufferings. And also we say, that is called some, that liberation, that state of being freed from the suffering that would have occurred otherwise, even temporarily, is called a nirvana. Another way to explain this, liberation from the woeful states, not permanently I'm talking, at least temporarily, is a liberation, is a nirvana. Why is that? Now think, we are born in the human realm. Now this is the human realm, our human life. Now think about the past life. There was abundance of karma abandon karma within ourselves. There was karma. Now, what do we think? Didn't we have the potential karma to be born in the woeful realms? Yes, we had. Because in terms of the samsara, according to Buddhism, there is no being who had not done a woeful deeds, and there is no being who doesn't have a potential to be born in the hells 400,000 times, million times. It's uncountably. We do have that potency. So what does it mean we are born in the human realm? Means at the moment of death, the karma which gained the opportunity, we're not talking about the death moment mind state here, we're talking about the karma which gained the opportunity, was a kusala karma. Maybe it's because we maintain a good mind state at the moment of death, or maybe we were supported by a good friend, or maybe that's how we lived our life. Whatever reason, a good karma gained the opportunity, so we were born. But the thing is, at this level, think about this moment before death. We had the potency to be born in the woeful realms. We had the potency to be born in the good realms. Both the potencies were there. The suffering, if you think about the suffering, not think about in terms of noble truths, in terms of noble truths, whatever existence is suffering. But if you think about in the ultimate sense, we understand being born in the woeful realm is a great suffering. Being liberated is a bliss. We do aspire for that. We do wish for that. Entirely all the sane humans would wish for that, because some people are wishing to be born in the hells. Because I once met a friend when I was going to colleges, not in our college, a different college. He directly mentioned to me that his desire is to burn in the hell with Satan. So that's his desire. So sometimes people would desire to be born in the hell, very rarely. And he said there are such, he has his group that would like to be burned in the hell with the sun. So his desires was quite strange. So anyway, I think his desire would easily be accomplished. So this opportunity was gained, a good karma would gain. So we know that here we had the potency. So the causes were there at this moment. The causes were there to encounter the effect. What was the effect of suffering? Being born in the woeful realm. The effect has not arisen. Think about this moment. The causes were there. Effects of the woeful realm was not occurred yet. So what happened? By one means, we suppressed that effect. Instead of getting a woeful karma, akusala karma came forth. So the akusala karmas would give rebirth, would be suppressed temporarily as long as we remain in this life. As long as we remain, and as a human being, there is not going to be experience of the suffering of the woeful realms in this life. We may have experience, we would experience suffering, but not in the level of a woeful being. So therefore, this suffering, this moment, a kusala karma gained the opportunity, suppressing all the akusala karmas. Suppressing means not giving the opportunity to them. Not giving an opportunity. So the cause was put down. Here it was not eradicated, it was put down. The best word to use here is put down, because this line would say the cause was eradicated. Cause was temporarily put down. The mark put down can indicate permanently putting down, permanently eradicating, or temporarily. So what happens? The non-arisen effect is the suffering here would also be put down temporarily. So when the next life, if akusala karma gained the opportunity, we would not be freed from that suffering. We would encounter into the woeful realms. So that's why it's called a liberation. It matches the formula. What is the formula? Causes prevail. Effect has not arisen. We either eradicate or temporarily put it down. Then we are freed from this from effect, either permanently or temporarily. So during this period of being a human being, we are in a sort of a nirvana. What is that nirvana? That is being freed from the woeful realm. That's why normally I used to say in practical means in some Dhamma talks, like we as human beings, we do have problems in our lives. Sometimes economic problems, family problems, sickness, non-confidence about our abilities, about ourselves, about the personalities and so forth. There are various distress and all this. So, but if we list down all our problems and according to Buddhism, go to a hungry ghost, a peta, and try to explain this list that I'm not in a very happy state. you would surely say, what are you talking about? I've been suffering for thousands of millions of years without any lump of food or a drop of water. And you are complaining that I'm wishing to be a human. I'm looking for the time when I'll be a human. And you are coming and complaining about the human life. So thing is, now actually we are in that bliss. We are in that bliss without, how to say, because we had the potency. When we compare this, our bliss, when we are in a human realm, we are freed from that awful realm. We get to understand this bliss only when we start to compare it with others. There's also another point. It's when we only compare it with others. Next point, I'll be explaining the remaining in brief before we go into the next Tadanga Nirvana. Another point to explain is that. Now the Sammuti Nirvana, whatever the state it is, the state of Nirvana is not something that we always feel. It's not something that we always feel as we have a pleasant feeling. Now, if you are in a jhana, you always feel that pleasant feeling. If you are in a good samadhi, you have that experience. The feeling is there. The bliss is there. We know we are in such a good state. But this kind of a liberation is not Vedaita. It's not like the feeling. It's something that you attain. It's something that we attain. Now, when we understand the existence of such nirvana, then the question comes, does this liberation exist? Does this such a liberation exist according to some Theravada teachers like Lady Seado and so forth? Yes, that is an existence because it matches the formula and it has been explained. It is something that is so valuable that we strive for. When you go into the deep literature and analyze it in terms of this philosophy, we find Buddha has already acknowledged such states, but not directly mentioning it as a Sammuti Nirvana, but we can see the value of such things. That's why putting effort and getting rid of troubles is considered as something that is done by wise people. That is something we have to achieve. The efforts come because of that. Because that non-arisen state of suffering is something which is really blissful, and that is something which is valuable, and we aspire for that. It's a state. It's not a thing. It's a state. It's a state being free from the suffering. So, according to the first explanation, it does exist. The same formula. When something is not there, the second state comes. So, that is the unconditioned state. Right? There can be arguments about this existence, but teachers like Lady Seado, Venerable Chanda Vimala of Sri Lanka, they do follow and they show lots of evidences from the literature to show that such state has been advocated by the Buddha himself. Anyway, so the next point is, I think I remember I explained about the Asanya Satta last week, that I would explain what kind of a bliss it is. Now think, this liberation is causes are put down, non-arisen effects are put down, either temporarily or permanently. If the cause is permanently removed, it will be a permanent liberation. If it is temporarily suppressed, it would be a temporarily. Temporal liberation means you attain that state temporarily and you come out of it. For example, now the akusala was suppressed, kusala gained the opportunity, we are in a blissful state. So what happens? If another akusala comes in front and we are born in a woeful realm, we lose this state. We lose the state of a blissful abode. We come out of it. I'll be explaining in a few lectures what is this, how do we explain this as a state, the 31 existence, gati. We have various explanations, three explanations of gati. I'll come to that in a different lecture. So now the thing is, this liberation, even while we are in that liberation, it's not necessarily that we know it always. Now, another type of a liberation is like the sickness of the body, being healthy. Because our body is prone to all sorts of suffering. All sort of suffering. Our body is such a thing that suffering could occur anytime. So, if we maintain a good health by having proper meals, by maintaining exercises and so forth, we have to put effort to that, then we stay in a healthier state. It's being freed from the suffering. So now how do we put this into formula? The causes were there. Our body is subject to such diseases. If we just don't eat for a few days, we'll get sick. So that is the nature of the body. The body has all the causes to get the sickness, which has not arisen yet. Only if we maintain that, if we put that, if we keep the causes at bay, we don't let it to come out, get it activated, we can put this down, the sickness, and we can stay healthier. It's considered as a one state of a blissful state. So, but the thing is, it is not something that we experience. All experience means not we feel all the time. When we are having a party or a birthday party or a whatever party, then we know that always the blissful feeling is happening within us. If you are in a good samadhi, the bliss is there. But this liberation is not like that. It's not like that. It's a different kind of attainment. Now, we are in a blissful state as long as we live as human beings. And when we start to compare ourselves with a woeful being, that time we get to know what sort of a bliss, what a great bliss that I have been experiencing, I have been in so far. Then we feel, oh, just being a human being is a great achievement. Nothing else, like even we don't achieve anything within our lives. Just being a human being is a great bliss. It's just a great bliss. Sometimes we do see people who are sick, and then we normally say how lucky we are, because we also have that potency to get so sick, but still we maintain ourselves because of our past karma or because of our good behaviors. We are not experiencing that bliss. So what do we think? Now at that moment we get to know how lucky we are and what a blissful state we are in. Now think. Being a human doesn't mean that we are always happy. We have ups and downs, that's for sure. But while we are sad, while we are in a sorrowful state, does it mean that we lose that blissful state of being a human being? No. We are still in a human life, but at the same time, we do experience certain sufferings. So, at that moment, we are not contemplating about our bliss. So, therefore, when we say this bliss, they have two types of blisses. Vedaita bliss. Vedaita bliss means the bliss we experience like a feeling. Avedaita. Avedaita bliss. Vedana. This is experiencing. We call non-experiencing. Non-experiencing means we don't feel it like a feeling. Now, we may be having troubles in our lives, but it doesn't mean that you deprived of that human state. That bliss is always there. As long as you are human, you are with that bliss. Whether you think about it or not, only it would become apparent to us only when we compare ourselves with a woeful being. Only then we start to think, oh, I'm in such a blissful state. I don't need to worry much when I compare it with someone. So when we may be sad in our minds, but physically we are not experiencing such a bad state of a sick person. So therefore, whether we understand it or not, whether we contemplate it or not, we are in that bliss. That bliss is not something that we need to experience like a feeling. We are in it. Whether you know it or not, we are in it. Whether we contemplate upon it or not, we are in that bliss. That's why whether a person is having a correct view or a wrong view, whether he's doing good deeds or bad deeds, doesn't matter. As long as he's a human being, he's freed from the woeful states. And how did it match? Yes, in the previous life, he had the opportunity to be born, he had the potency to be born in the woeful states, but it was suppressed because of kusala kamma came forth, and he is freed from that suffering. So that is how. Now, asanya satta, if you go into the asanya satta, how do we consider it as a blissful state? Now, we know nama and rupa, when we come into a higher spiritual level, nama and rupa are the suffering. So one consider that having nama activated means nama, having chitta, is a great suffering. So it would be a great bliss that if I be born in a life without chitta. So we know arising of chitta, getting the objects, arising and passing of vidita is a great suffering. When we come in terms of fourth root, no, in terms of the conditioned realities. So what happens? A person attains the asanya satta, attains the jhanas, and develop the chitta viraga bhavana, and is born in the woeful realm, in the Asanyasatta realm, he would stay there for 500 eons. And someone can ask, is it like a sleep that you don't have any experience? It's different. Because in sleep, you have the bhavanga chitta arising and passing away. But in Asanyasatta, there's no chitta. So even we are not experiencing it. That's why the experience is not a matter of fact to decide whether it's a bliss or not. Because even we are not contemplating about our human existence, even while we are in troubles, still we are in that bliss. So it's whether we contemplate or not, it doesn't matter here. It's a bliss that exists regardless of our observation. That's why nirvana is a blissful state. Because at that level, no one knows it. There's no experience in it. It's a cessation of the unconditioned states. So likewise in the Asanyasatta, because there is no self to observe, and also chitta has ceased. So suffering of chitta is not there, which is different from a person sleeping. It's true that both of them doesn't have an awareness. In the sleeping, the bhavanga awareness is there, which is subtle, which cannot be recalled. That's a different thing. Then it's not going to, but still, the thing is that he is not, as long as in the Asanyasatta realm, even though he doesn't have a contemplation upon himself, is a state freed from the suffering of mind. So then one can ask a question, is Asanyasatta similar to Nirodha Samapatti? No, it's different. Because the thing is, Asanyasatta doesn't have a mind. Nirodha Samapatti doesn't have a mind. But the thing is, Asanyasatta is not freed from the suffering that is going to happen. So he's not liberated from that. The thing, the main idea is, this liberation is not something that we need to experience like a feeling. That's why it's called Avedaita bliss. Avedaita bliss. It's not something that we need to experience like we are experiencing a jhana and so forth. Whether we think about it or not, we are in it. So therefore, now Asanyasatta doesn't have a mind, but he is bound with lots of suffering in future. So it's true that he, in terms of not having a mind, it's a great bliss than the remaining Brahma realms. But he is not freed from all that. But a person in the Nirodha Samapatti doesn't have a mind at that level, but his body is there, hard, gross body than the Brahmas. If you are talking about a human who attained Nirodha Samapatti in the human realm. Now, he doesn't have the mind, but thing is, he is freed from the suffering. So his bliss is higher than that of an Asanyasatta being. Because even though both of them do not contemplate about the suffering that is to come, it is a fact that a person of Arahanti Nirodha Samapatti is freed from all the suffering. Is freed from all the suffering that he would encounter in future, and if he was a putujana. And Asanyasatta, it's true that he is not experiencing any chitta, but he is not freed from the suffering. So it's a completely a two different states. So how do we differentiate these states? Now the thing is, we have to change the way we look into this. Because sometimes we do try to evaluate the bliss in terms of experience. We tend to think that if we don't experience it, we tend to evaluate the value of the suffering in terms of whether we experience it or not. No, it's not the fact in Buddhism. It's not the way in Buddhism. In Buddhism, regardless, now Aveda is the sukha, the liberation is whether you experience it or not. Whether you experience means whether you contemplate upon it or not. When you are in such a bliss, a state, you are in it. Arahant, even he's having sickness in his body, he's freed. He's always free from the suffering that is about to happen. Even regardless whether he contemplates or not, he's freed from that suffering. Sometimes he's focusing on something else, like teaching Dhamma or involving cleaning some dirty things in the monastery. But he's still freed. He's freed from the suffering. So that is called the liberation. I'll conclude the lecture. Like the causes are, when the causes are remaining, prevailing, effect has not arisen yet. Causes are prevailing, effect has not arisen yet. If the causes were put down, we put down that effect either permanently or temporarily, and that is that state of being freed from suffering is called a liberation. So I explained the sammuti nirvana. Sammuti nirvana means, I'll repeat the sentence again, I think I'll take another lecture
to explain the remaining, and also this, because it's maybe it's something new to some listeners, so I'll take another day so we can have more thinking on it and also have some discussions on it. So Sammuti Nirvana 1.8 is the temporary freedom from the suffering of the world such as pain, fear, cruelty of others and sickness, which have not been confronted yet, encountered yet. So the suffering in the woeful realms, suffering in this of the bodily sickness, suffering that would occur from the society, if we are able to put our proper means to prevent it. So that is at that moment. So then the next thing is, Sammuti Nirvana can be attained by whatever means, whether it's wholesome or not, doesn't matter in the end. Whenever Ananda Metteya put this into his discourses, he said, think about a civil war in a country. People are experiencing lots of troubles because of this war. If the government put an end to this war, whatever means, I'm not praising the war. You put an end to a war normally by killing others. It's true, Panadipata. So after the war has been put into an end, the people in that area would experience the freedom from such dangers. So in that manner, Venerable Chandravimala and also Venerable Lady Sayadaw says that we can have various sorts of Sammuti Nirvana based on the suffering that we are focusing on. There are various types of Sammuti Nirvanas that we can think about. It seems a little bit strange, but that is, but has it been explained in the literature in many places. And this blissful state become apparent to us only when we start to compare ourselves with others. That comparison was given in the Salleka Sutta by Buddha. That is for the Tadanga Nirvana, which I'll be explaining next week, Tadanga Nirvana. He mentioned to Venerable Chunda, you have to observe Sila and try to compare with others. Not to praise yourself or to look down upon others, to see that how much bliss that you are experiencing. Because people in the world have not restrained from killing animals, killing living beings, but you have restrained. So it shows that the great bliss you are in. So likewise, this is the putting down of the causes. This freedom of troubles was explained in the Kisa Gotami's Gatha. And also, I didn't give the list. There is a list that says this freedom from these of sufferings is considered as a Sammuti Nirvana. And it can be attained. It's a state. It's an unconditioned state that exists in the world forever. And you attain it and you come out of it. You attain it and you come out of it. How do we explain it based on this formula? The formula is, causes prevail, effect has not arisen yet. Before it arises, you put down the causes and the effects will be put down temporarily or permanently based on how the causes have been put down. So that is how we would explain about this liberation. And I would give the opportunity for the Q&A session. Hello, Dr. Yeah.
I have a lot of questions, but... Okay. I'm digesting the lecture right now, but okay, so I guess the first thing is, we know that there are a number of teachers who are advocating the idea that we are in Nibbana, but we don't know it. So is it like along the line with this kind of idea, Mandi?
Means, the thing is, I'm not familiar with such statements, like we are in Nirvana, but we are not.
We are not aware of it, so we just, you know, we're in there, we just don't know. But if we realize that we are in Nibbana, then yes, in fact we are in Nibbana. That's what they say.
You mean Theravada teachers? I think this is the idea of the Madhyamikas, right?
I'm not sure, but I've been hearing a number of teachers saying that, even some, I can say that some Vietnamese Theravada monks, that's what they've been saying.
Yeah, so if they are saying about the last Nirvana, then it contradicts, to my understanding, it contradicts with the Theravada teachings. So this is we are talking about another state. It's not the final, the great Nirvana that we aspire to. So this is, that's why we list them as a different type of a Nirvana. It's not the Nirvana that the Buddha has, like Buddha has praised, means the final liberation. So if someone says we are already in the final liberation that we don't experience, I think that would not match with this. We are talking about a state, unconditioned state, which is in the side of the Nirvana, but not the great Nirvana.
Okay, but then so during your lecture you said that this Nibbana is also unconditioned.
Yeah.
It is something. So it's a different kind of Nibbana. So that means there are so those five kinds of Nibbana, they are five different unconditioned.
Yes.
States.
Yeah. But actually, four and five are the same. 4 and 5 are the same. 1, 2, 3 are different.
I see. So we can take this. So for this particular samuti nibbana, so when it is an object, then we can take it by what kind of citta, Pandit?
It can be taken by kusala citta, akusala citta, or any kind of citta. It's not a problem. It has not been explained in the Dhamma Sanghani directly. But it can be known with whatever citta. But only the last two nirvanas can be known with the jnana sampayutta citta.
Okay. So does that mean that except beings in hell, everyone else can take nibbana as the object?
Nibbana means the samuti nibbana, yes.
Yeah. Everyone in hell.
Everyone in the hell. They are not in that state during their life. Yeah. We can call like that. But I would not. I am unable to give an answer whether they cannot take or not. But it's like.
What I'm saying, the reason I'm saying that because like hell is the lowest.
Yes.
The lowest level.
There's no way go beyond.
They're not free from anything. Yes.
Yeah. But the thing is now. Thing is, I'm also not perfect on this classification. What they now, if we ask, is Peta world is a liberation compared to the hell? The categorization has come. Woeful states are one category, blissful states are another category. So within the blissful state, Deva, Brahmas, they may have, surely they have different higher stages. But within the woeful realm, like if we are freed from hell, but we are in the Peta world, Is it one kind of a liberation? We can say in this analogy, we can say it. But in the books, what I have seen is the line has been drawn from the woeful to blissful. So all the woeful are considered as a deprived state. Blissful is considered as a liberated state.
I see.
And also within the human realm, now there are also explanations given by Lady Seyadaw even. He says, encountering the sufferings at the edge of antakappa, like the destruction of living beings. So, if we can get rid of that by some other means, like some beings who doesn't listen to the advice given by that Brahma or Deva, they would face their troubles. Ones who listen would run away and escape and stay for a few months and be freed from that. So, these are all considered as liberations, like getting freed from such things. It's a very vast topic. When we think about it very deeply, I myself also have some questions about it to be clarified. But when we think roughly, I personally feel this makes sense what they are saying when you put it into the formula. But if you go in detail and try to analyze each and every incident, we can have lots of. Personally, I also may have lots of questions to ask myself, but this is how it has been explained, and as it has lots of benefits to our lives, like the way we think. That's why I took this topic.
I see. Okay, thank you, Bhante. Okay.
So one more thing, like for example, according to that, now when we come into the next lecture, we talk about Vikkhamana Nirvana. So someone of observe sila, like, or think about a monk life, like who gets rid of all the responsibilities and burden of the household life. So becoming a monk, according to Theravada tradition, is considered of having a certain blissful, coming into a certain blissful state. Whether you practice or not, it doesn't matter in the end. When we talk about this blissful state, because as long as you are have given up the household life and lives a life of a recluse, so that. Because we are freed from those bondages and all these mental burdens. So as we are in that state, we are freed from that suffering. So, and also, this is called Sammuti Nirvana. Sammuti Nirvana is based on the naming that we give. It, it, also has now the monkhood may not be such a valuable thing in another exist like maybe in Uttarakuru or something. Maybe it depends. Social status and all depends on it. And also some samuti nirvana would be like depends mean it is not that the unconditioned state is arising, but it may change because according to the time even. The how we consider about something as a liberation. So how we attain into that liberation. Then we observe a sila and we do not break it. As long as we do not break it, we are in that bliss. We are in that bliss. Bliss means that killing, the idea of killing, the burning of killing, the thought, burning thought of killing would not occur in myself as long as I maintain that sila very, very to a very high level. So at that time, I may get hardship for whatever other reasons, but doesn't mean that my mind is not occupied that suffering, is by that suffering. So as long as one protects the sila, even though he may have some defilements within mind about something others, but as long as the defilements of gross, rough defilements that break the sila occurs, our mind is in a certain blissful state. So that's even the value of sila comes when we think about this. Now sila is observing just a mind moment. But when, as long as we don't break it, we say we are in the sila. As long as we don't break it, we are in the sila. How do we explain that we are in the sila? Our mind is in. Now, for instance, now this is the moment we observe the sila. Now we are doing something else. Now this is the moment we break the sila. It doesn't mean that the entire time we are thinking about our sila, we are doing all sort of different activities. But what happens with this suppression of defilements, our mind enters into that state of being not doing that harmful evil deed. So we may do some other evil deeds, but we are our mind in that regard, we are in a, our mind is not occupied by the defilements of killing. When we start to kill, when we give up that sila, our mind comes out from that blissful state. So even we are involved in some other work, our mind is in a certain state. So that's why we say you are still in sila. Sila is not the state. Sila is this thought, this effort. Because of this sila, our mind comes into a very blissful, calm state, freed from the defilement that breaks the sila. So as long as we break it, our mind it deprives of that state. So therefore, the sila becomes powerful, the stronger. It would give more results how long you stay in this state. It means if we can keep it for one day, it would give certain results. But if we can maintain that state, stay in that state for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, this sila would get stronger and stronger and it would give more and more results. So therefore, the bliss of sila, the value of sila, is also explained based on this state that we attain by observing it.
Okay, thank you. But I'm still kind of having a problem here because, so here you say that, I think we can say this as a relative Nibbana, because like you said, that for one person it is Nibbana, for the other one is not. Right? Because like the state of being human is Nibbana. For, let's say, you said that for animals, things, because that's what free from the suffering that they are experiencing. So, but then the state of being human is not nirvana for, let's say, deva, because, you know, that is like a lower state for them. So, like, there are a lot of stages in here, and because you said one thing is that these are the adjacent states, it looks to me that they are concrete. So many of them.
Yeah. So that's how the teachers say there are like lots of such states that we can explain. So then deva is a human state. Now that's why there should be some ultimate line for that. There should be ultimate bottom line. So human realm is considered as a nibbana. Deva would consider as a higher state of nirvana. So it doesn't mean that human realm. Now, a deva falling from deva realm to human is not depriving of the entire thing. He's coming into a lower state of nirvana, I would call. Coming out of the, go to the woeful realm, he is fully deprived of the nirvana connected to the existence. So, as you said, what the teachers are saying is that there are infinite numbers. That's why I said when we go into this very deeply, think about it, we do have things to clarify. We do have things to clarify, like we have lots of questions to think on it.
I acknowledge that. Thank you. Yeah. Samuttinibbana is a condition if we need some protectors to guarantee such freedom from woeful state.
Can you repeat it again? Sorry.
Yes, it says, as to Samuttinibbana is a condition, and then
it's one question, right?
Something like, I'm not sure. It's hard. So it put a question mark in the middle. But do we need some protectors to guarantee such freedom from woeful state? I'm not sure if I understand this question either. So I guess the question, first question is for the Samuttinibbana is condition. Then I guess you already answered that is unconditioned.
Yes, it's unconditioned. Right.
Right. And then the next one is, if we need some protectors to guarantee such freedom from woeful state, does that mean like, do we need some protectors to guarantee such freedom from woeful state?
No need, right?
Right, yes.
Because it's the karma that protects you. Your wholesome good karma that protects you from going into woeful state. No, because it's mentioned, dammo have rakkati dhammachari, dammo suchinno sukama vahati, esani sanso dammo suchin, damme suchinne, Nadugatin gachati dhammachari. Dhamma will protect you from going into the woeful state. That dhamma is not the teachings, your practice. Patipatti dhamma. It's the wholesome deeds that we do. Actually, the wholesome deeds are if we want to use it as a metaphor of a protector, the protector is the wholesome deeds that we do. That is patipatti dhamma. We have three types of dhamma. Pariyatti, patipatti, pativeda. Pariyatti means the studying of dhamma. Patipatti is practicing of Dhamma. Pativeda is attainment of this supramundane states. So Patipatti is giving dana, practicing sila, helping others, maybe teaching Dhamma or meditating and so forth. All the good deeds, supporting our parents, supporting the family with a good mind and so forth. So this Patipatti Dhamma will be our protector from stopping us from going into the woeful state. So in another way, kusala karma. Is that we have to say. So it's sometimes like supported by others. I mention a word that supported by others. It means now, for instance, sometimes we may be having a low mind at the moment of death. So sometimes the friends would come and say, no, don't think like that. You have done such things. And they would bring our mind up back to the normal state, like a wholesome state. Then based on that, we'd be born in a good state. Like the story I mentioned about the father of Venerable Sona, who was a hunter and became a monk and was helped by his son to go to the Deva realm instead of going into the hells. So that kind of friendship is there. Support can be given. And also Buddha was the greatest supporter in that sense that helps us to go into the good realms. But in the end, the proximate cause. Now, for example, if even Venerable Sona would not be able to support his father, unless he arose joy in the wholesome deed that Sona was doing, if he said, no, I don't need such things, I'm just in pain, and he neglected that karma, he would not be able to be gone in there. So in the end, even people support us, the real protector would be the karmas that we have done or that we do at the moment of death, before death. So I would say, so that is the instrument. We can say it's an instrument. Magga Chitta is an instrument for us to attain Nirvana, the great Nirvana. Magga Chitta is the instrument. Now another way, another point for some who are interested in deep Dhamma, like was suffering eradicated by Nirvana or by Magga Chitta, if someone asks, by the instrumental case. In the Pali, Lady Sayadaw says, in the Pali, Nirvana has never been used in the instrumental case. With regard to suffering, it has been used with the locative case. Suffering ceases in Nirvana. It ceases in Nirvana. It ceased by Magga Chitta. Ceased by Magga Chitta. So likewise, we can say we attain the nirvana with magga, by magga, as an instrument. So these states of samuti nirvana, the cessation, the suffering temporarily ceases in that nirvana. It is a cessation, a temporal cessation. We are freed from that, but it is attained. That cessation is done. Like, how do we attain that? It with kamma. If you are talking about blissful state and woeful state, kamma is the instrument. So instead of saying as a protector, we can say, yeah, we can call it as a protector, as a metaphor. So in the end, the real protector for us to be free from bliss or woeful states is our own good deeds. I would say like that. So it doesn't mean that it doesn't make it a conditioned state. It's already there. Nirvana already there. Magga Chitta doesn't arouse Nirvana. Magga Chitta is supportive. It's called Sampapaka Hetu. Sampapaka Hetu, Sampapaka Phala. Hetu Phala. Phala is a result. Hetu is a cause. So normally avijja is Hetu, Sankara is Phala, result. That is in terms of Janaka. Janaka is producing. Sampapaka Hetu Phala means... Now, Nirvana is a pala here, Sampapaka pala. It's not that the Sampapaka Hetu produce Nirvana. Nirvana exists. It is attained by the noble path. Magga is a Hetu. It's like now there is a river. From here, this shore and the next shore. So if you want to reach this shore, we have to use a boat. With the boat, we reach there. Boat is the cause. Shore is the effect. In this regard, the words may not be properly translated. This is the by means we attain a state which already exists. The bank, the other bank already exists. It's not created by this boat. It is attained by this boat. So in Pali, the word Hetu and Phala has been used in this regard even. Sometimes Hetu and Phala means produces a new result which has not arisen yet. Like avijja produces Sankara. Sankara produces Nirvana. Vijnana. Vijnana. So, in this regard, cause is the instrument that is necessary to attain a state that already exists. So, therefore, kamma is an instrument by which you attain the sammuti nirvana. The efforts that we put, now for the bodhisattvas, that gata, bodhisattva, such a wise man, is an instrument that supports us to be freed. That's why sometimes leaders are very important to a country. Who takes, like the leaders who take the proper decision at the proper time. I think by present day, in some countries, people suffer because of not taking proper decisions. So a person who takes the proper decision at the proper time would bring people into a great bliss from such a pandemic. So likewise, we can interpret this, like, he is the means by which people enter into that suffering, liberation. So that's why, as Dr. Ryan said, and also Venerable Lady Siyadu, Venerable Chandrimala Thera, Ananda Mettaya Thera, some Theravada high scholars, like Lady Siyadu says, that we can have countless, I would not say infinite, but it's like lots of number of liberations that we can think of like that. Yeah, and that they are attained by in terms of some other means. Now, when we come to Tadanga Nirvana, it's confined to the unwholesome states, suppressing by wholesome states. Samuti Nirvana is a broader aspect. It doesn't. So, this reason, kamma doesn't make human existence. Kamma doesn't make human existence conditioned. It already exists. Kamma is a means by which you attain it. Like the Nirvana is attained with Magga.
Thank you, Bhante Sarasarasaru. And especially thank you for those terms, Bhante Sambhapaka. Yeah. I have been looking for that term for a long time.
Right. So it's like, yeah, we have three. Just to, before we go to the next one. We have three terms. Janaka, Hetu and Phala, Sambhapaka, Hetu and Phala, then Nyapaka, Hetu, Nyapaka, Hetu and Phala. So Nyapaka means some causes are necessary for us to understand some meaning. The main explanation is the words, the signs, the grammar, the sentences. All these are nyapaka hetu. Phala is the meaning that we understood. Either it is conventional meaning or ultimate meaning. So the word nirvana, its word is a nyapaka. Nama panyati is nyapaka hetu. The idea of nirvana is a nyapaka phala. Not the consciousness. The idea known by the consciousness is nyapaka phala. It's another way of explaining hetu phala. In this regard, there is another ultimate nyapaka. There is another explanation of nyapaka hetu. Kaya vinyati and vachi vinyati are nyapaka hetu. And the idea, we get to know, this person is going to hit me, this person is with lust, he is angry with me, he is attracted to me. So these kinds of his consciousness, the doer's consciousness, is the nyapaka phala, that which is known by our mind. So nyapaka hetu and nyapaka phala are twofold. The words, the nama panyati and the vinyati, the kaya vinyati and vachi vinyati, according to some sub-commentaries. Yeah. So these are the threefold hetu phala. Explaining there about.
Thank you so much, Sadhu. Yeah, and I think the person who asked question also understood
sadhu.
You explained. Sadhu.
So then we'll continue now. I think it was a new and strange kind of a lecture, because we don't discuss about these matters more often in our Dhamma studies. But as it has been explained by some great scholars of Theravada Buddhism, I took this approach, and I see that it can explain lots of practical aspects in our day-to-day life, and it's also very useful to when we think about it. So I would recommend you to think more on this topic. That's why I would take it another day to explain Tadanga, Vikkammana, and Samuccheda Nirvana, which would be much easier to understand than the Sammuti Nibbana. But if you have thought about it, we can have a good discussion during the Q&A session. To be frank, when I think about Sammuti Nirvana, as Dr. Ryan mentioned, I also have some questions that are unanswered by myself, and also because we don't have the great scholars at the moment to ask this question. Like the scholar, not great scholars, means there are great scholars, the scholars who wrote the books that we normally read. So therefore, otherwise, would have asked these questions directly from. If Lady Zyado was there, there will be a lot of questions to be asked, and I'm sure he would give a lot of good answers. So yeah, I'll extend the lecture. I will extend.
How about the explaining a little bit about the liberation meant by sila,
yeah,
by samadhi, and panya? These 3 points are also very crucial for this lecture. Therefore,
yeah,
lately occurred to.
Yes, sir.
Request.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, Swayana, sir, to take it to the next lecture, because I'll be explaining Tadanga, Vikkammana, and Samuccheda. So it's Thila Samadhi Panya.
Right.
Yeah. So that's why, as Bhante Swayana said, Devananda Swayana said, because when we come into Tadanga, Vikkammana, and Samuccheda, it will make more and more sense related to our practice, how Sila and Samadhi and Panya is valuable to us. So thank you for that, Swayana, sir. So I'll take that lecture into that. But Sammuti Nirvana, sure. There are some points that we have to think. So I request you, all of you, to think about this point. And if you need some reference, please go to Venerable Lady Seado's Nibbana Deepani, which has been translated in Siale. That has been translated, right? I think Siale Panya knows.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. Yes, yes.
So Nibbana Deepani. So please read it if you have the time. And the ones who can read the Sinhalese, please read the Nirvana Vinishya. That's sorry for the nuns like who cannot read Sinhalese. Nirvana Vinishya. Nirvana Vinishchaya. In future, we'll think about translating this into English. And the Nibbana Deepani of Lady Seado. And there is a book about essays written by Venerable Ananda Metteya. Essays for the monks to study English, actually. So in that there is a one essay about these nirvana, 7 types of nirvana, which was really convincing. I have read it. Unfortunately, I don't have it. Like, if someone can search for that book, essays by Ananda Metteya, Pali made it, Isisado. Essays by English essays, something like that. By Ananda Metteya. you can read this. Balangoda, right? His village is Balangoda. Because in Sri Lanka, we use the village name in the beginning. So that also another reference that we can use to think about, have more knowledge on it, and I hope we can have a good discussion next week, hopefully. Right. Okay, and then thank you very much for listening. I wish may this help us to attain our full liberation, and also may the Buddha Sasana last long with this merit. Buddha Sasanam Chirantittatu, Buddha Sasanam Chirantittatu, Buddha Sasanam Chirantittatu, Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.